Welcome to another day on retreat. I got some important business first of all. Very good. Now that's out of the way, I can give the talk. Okay, those of you who've known me a long time know that I love fun and games. And that just actually brings happiness into the mind. As I mentioned sometime or other, I forget when, that when you bring up happiness into the mind, it's just so easy to meditate. Why? Because when you develop happiness, you want to be here. It's usually most of the, what we call the defilements and the hindrances, the things which stop you meditating, is a reaction to unhappiness. And all the problems of your life, and I think of all the problems you've got in your life. And straight away you want to escape somewhere. Think of all the other difficulties there are in the world. You know, you wonder, so what we can do about the state of this world. Think of all the problems in you. And of course, that's why people, they want to sort of escape into fantasies, into watching TV, into planning, into doing things. What more do you need to do in your life? How much more do you want? And one of the sayings I've been repeating many times in the last year or two, whenever you want something more, you cannot enjoy what you already have. That's really profound. That's actually another way of saying the second noble truth. No craving leads to suffering. Whenever you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. You've all worked so hard in your life. You know, you've struggled, you've pushed yourself, stayed up late at night working or studying, and you've done so much. Now you're here. Enjoy it. So when you don't want anything more, you can enjoy what you already have. So, today, see if you can put away all your wanting until tomorrow. Today, I don't want anything more. I'm just going to pause, stop, sit down in the journey of my life, which is always going on to the next thing, always traveling on to some new destination, so we can never sit down and enjoy the place we've already come to, right here. You work so hard even just to get here. You know, getting time off work, getting time off from your family, you know, traveling, going through customs and getting the air tickets and getting your Tiger Airways plane delayed and all this other stuff, which you finally you've come here. You've struggled so hard. Now you're here. Enjoy. In other words, while you're here, don't spoil the time in this retreat by wanting jhana, by wanting enlightenment, by wanting peace, by wanting anything. Because as soon as you want something more, you cannot enjoy what you already have. So today, every moment, see if you can enjoy the place at which you've arrived, now, right here. And every time you want something, even if you just want some extra breakfast, even if you want, you know, to get some extra peace, even if you want this stupid mind to be still, all of that stops you enjoying what you already have. And once you enjoy what you already have, this stupid old mind, this sleepy, restless, crazy old mind, this old, weak body, when you can just enjoy that, then you find that is a path to jhana. Not wanting it, but stopping and being still and valuing every moment of today. You know, the one of my most famous stories, you know, that book I wrote, Open the Door of Your Heart, people think that that is just a you know, like a beginner's book. And you got the meditation book, and you got that How to Live Everyday Life book. But no, those stories apply to the deepest of meditations. And that story of the two bad bricks in the wall, when you really understand that story very deeply, you understand how to get into jhanas, the deepest meditation. Why can't you just enjoy where you already are? Because of the two bad bricks. My two bad brick mind. My two bad brick body. My two bad brick life. The two bad brick meditators sitting next to you. There's always got these noises which they make. Always making noises. Just when you're about to get into jhana. Bang! So, why is it that we always focus on the faults? Why is it that even in a beautiful meditation retreat center like this, where I've just, you know, gone without sleep, worked hard, all the other monks have worked so hard to make this beautiful retreat center, but it's not perfect. The faults, the things which should be better, be careful. Because if you start looking at the faults in this retreat center, it's like looking at the bricks, and there's always one or two which are crooked. If you want to know, I'll point them out to you. But that's not the point, because every time you get fault-finding mind, it creates wanting. It creates this idea that this isn't good enough. That you can't rest. That you can't be still. Because you want it to be better. And every time you want it to be better, you can't enjoy the beauty which is already here. So, when you understand the two bad brick simile, you understand it's the nature of the unenlightened mind to see faults and to fix them. That's what you've been doing all your life, fixing faults. Fixing faults in your education to make sure you're smarter and get better grades at school and at university. Fixing faults, you know, in your appearance, so you're more beautiful and more lovely and more attractive. Fixing faults in your partner, that's an endless task. Anyone's been married a few years, you cannot do that. Fixing faults in your office, fixing faults in your body. We're always fixing faults. So much so that, you know, we never have any rest, because the faults are endless. So instead, we realize that this is good enough. And when you realize it's good enough, it means you can let go of wanting. You can enjoy this moment. Sure, it's not perfect. Sure, you're not perfect. Your partner's not perfect. But they're good enough. The next time you send a birthday card to the one you've been living with for so many years, or it's an anniversary card, or a Christmas card, say, darling, you're good enough. Is that all? Just good enough? I'll see my lawyer, I'm getting divorced. No, they are good enough, and you're good enough. And this moment is good enough. In fact, that good enough is one of my favorite mantras. And I encourage you to use that in your meditation. Walking, sitting meditation. Good enough. In Thai, that was poor D. Poor D. Poor D. As you walk meditation, the left foot, good. Right foot, enough. Good enough. Good enough. Good enough. As you do breathing meditation, breathing in, good. Breathing out, enough. Good enough. Because once you start repeating that to yourself again and again and again, it actually sinks in. You are brainwashing yourself. And when that happens, when it's good enough, it means at last you can relax. You don't have to fix things up anymore. You don't have to make them better. You don't have to strive to sort of get to this place where everything is all fixed up. No, right now this is good enough. So you can relax, you can rest. Your life is good enough. The stock market is good enough. Your finances are good enough. Doesn't matter how bad you think they are, it's good enough. You can survive another day. Who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. But when you say good enough, it means you can relax. You can only find peace in good enough. Now, people are pretty good when they come on a retreat like this to say, yeah, the food is good enough. It's pretty nice. The accommodation is good enough. And the place is good enough. The teacher, well, maybe good enough, I hope. But the one thing which is hard is you. It's so hard for people these days to look at themselves and say, well, yeah, I'm good enough. Because we all see our two bad bricks. And we always want to fix ourselves up. And that is the biggest problem in meditation. Never appreciating yourself as good enough. Which means you're striving and struggling and trying to get something, trying to go somewhere. Which means you can never find peace. The goal of the meditation is peace, contentment. And all the other things come as a result of that. All the stillness, the bliss, the great lights, the nimittas, the jhanas, enlightenment, all come because you created so much peace. You can't create peace when you're busy fixing things up. When you're busy fixing things up, you're just making more business for yourself. More business for your mind. How can you stop thinking? When there's so many things to think about. When there's nothing to think about because everything is good enough. Food, good enough. My meditation, good enough. Health, good enough. That really stops the thinking. Nothing to think about anymore. In other words, when you understand the meaning of good enough, when you really penetrate the simile of the two bad bricks in the wall, it means you built the wall. Now you can sit down and relax and have a cup of tea. You don't have to fix up the faults anymore. You can let things be. And that's exactly what you do when you're sitting down with your eyes closed. You let things be. Sure, when you're meditating, you can see two or three bad bricks in your meditation. You're sleepy, you're restless, you're stupid. Yeah, but it's okay. In this retreat, you have my permission. If you really don't doubt me, I'll print it out on a piece of paper and sign it. You've got permission to be stupid in this meditation retreat. So give yourself permission to be stupid. Give yourself permission to be free. Give yourself permission. You don't have to attain anything at all in this meditation. You don't have to go home afterwards and people say, "What did you get?" He said, "I got nothing. Beautiful, wonderful, nothing." But at least I'm now at peace with my stupidity. When I came here, I was making war with my stupidity. I was trying to be this meditator. You know, the only person who can sit still is a statue. So don't try and be a statue, for goodness sake. Be at peace, be yourself, be kind, be gentle, make peace. And then you find wonderful things happen. Because you're not fixing things up, because you're not aiming for your idea of perfection, because you're not wanting anything more, and you're totally at peace and satisfied with this crazy, tired, dull, restless mind. You are creating the conditions for peace, for stillness. I called it meditation karma. Just like in life, there's good karma and bad karma. So if you do good karma, you get sort of good things, good health, wealth, know, a nice time in life. If you do bad things, you get into all sorts of problems in life. In the same way, there's good meditation karma and there's bad meditation karma. You know what good meditation karma is? Making peace, being kind, being gentle. Bad meditation karma is wanting, ill will, striving, controlling, trying to sort of dominate your mind. Instead, we do good meditation karma. What you're experiencing right now, the tiredness, the restlessness, the dullness, the frustration, the boredom, whatever it is which you think is negative, that is the result of old karma. It's just here. You can't change it. I'm dull. That's because I haven't slept enough. You're restless because people have been talking to me with all the problems. So I've been agitating my mind. So there you are, this restless. That's old karma. It's here. I'm acknowledging it. What am I going to do about it? And it's what you're doing with what you've got is where meditation lies. It's not about sort of being restless or being still or being kind or having ill will. It's nothing to do with that. That's all karma. It's what you're doing with this. So, whatever you have to deal with any time in meditation today, make peace with it. Be kind, be gentle. Make good karma with whatever you have to deal with in your meditation. This is good enough. I'm going to be kind. I'm going to be peaceful. I'm going to be still with this. And it's amazing the power of good meditation karma. Many years ago in the interviews, there was this person came up and they said they're having a terrible time in their meditation. I'd just given a talk on the five hindrances of desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse and doubt. And he said, I had all those five hindrances all at once. That's impossible! But that's what it felt like. And it was an attack. All the armies of illusion and delusion and stupidity were attacking him all in one go. He had desire, he also had ill will. He had restlessness, but he also had sloth and torpor. I don't know how he can do that, but he said he could. Everything all at once. And I said, there is a solution to that. When your mind goes crazy, when you think you're going berserk, when you're frustrated, striving at the end of your tether and nothing works, there is a solution. And I used this old Buddhist story, which some of you may have remembered when you're even at the Dharma school for kids. The Nalagiri strategy. For those of you who know your story of the Buddha, even though he was this really soft and kind and wise and gentle and wonderful being, still people got jealous. And they actually hatched a plot to kill him. And so had all these assassination attempts against the Buddha. Of course, none of them worked, because he was the Buddha. But anyway, they tried. And one of their methods, they got alcohol and they fed it to this elephant, this huge elephant. And when the elephant was drunk, they set him loose along the narrow streets of the town of Rajagaha, just at the time when the Buddha with his monks were coming in the opposite direction on arms round. And there was the elephant charging down the street, trampling everything, destroying trees, people, everything. And people were running for their lives, shouting, "The mad elephant, it's a wild elephant, get out of the way." And they came across the monks. And the monks, so peaceful, so calm, "Get out of the way, there's a wild elephant." And those monks, so peaceful, so calm, jumped over the fences, climbed the trees. Well, we're just human beings, all except two. And of course, one was the Buddha, and the other one was his faithful disciple Ananda. And there was Ananda and the Buddha as this wild elephant was charging in their direction. Have you ever seen that movie, High Noon? That was when I was a kid. That was like that. This sheriff and this gunslinger, and they were coming together closer and closer for a gunfight. This was like High Noon at Rajagaha. The Buddha and the elephant, who would win? So, Ananda, the great disciple and attendant of the Buddha, he stood in front of his teacher. You're not supposed to do that, but he stood in front. I'll protect my master. Let the elephant kill me, so you, the Buddha, can escape. There was such an act of devotion, sacrificing his own life for his master. And I sometimes ask, would any of you do that for me? No way, you'd be up the tree. Anyway, the Buddha looked at Ananda and gently pushed him aside. Very good, very impressive, but get out of the way, I can handle this. And so there was Ananda. So up and he left. There was the Buddha facing this elephant alone as they came closer and closer and closer. If that was on the TV, there'd be an advertising break. Who would win and how? Now, I have no doubts at all that the Buddha had great psychic powers. If he wanted to, the Buddha could have just grabbed that elephant by the end of the trunk, swirled him 3 times around his head, and thrown him over the Ganges River 300 kilometers away. That would be easy for someone with great psychic power. When it comes to psychic power, Superman, Spider-Man, they've got nothing on the Buddha. So there was the Buddha. He wouldn't use his psychic powers. So what did he use instead? Kindness. Metta. His powerful compassion. How I perceive the Buddha would have acted. Dear elephant, wild elephant, you can destroy me. You can crush me under your powerful feet. You can pick me up with your trunk and smash my body against the house and kill me. But the door of my heart will always be open to you, elephant. I forgive you. I love you. I care for you. Do what you want. The door of my heart open, no matter what you ever do. And in a couple of seconds, that elephant had stopped and was bowing his head in front of the Buddha, with the Buddha stroking his trunk. There, Nalagiri. There, Nalagiri. That was awesome. There, Nalagiri. That's how you subdue a wild elephant. And that's how you subdue your crazy mind, which is crushing everything, stamping on you, making you berserk, and it won't follow any commands. So you say, mind, whatever you do, you can send me to sleep. You can make me snore during Ajahn Brahm's Dhamma talks. You can be so restless you can't sit still for 5 seconds, but I still love you, mind. Mind, crazy mind, the door of my heart is always open to you, no matter what you ever do. And if you try that, within a few seconds, your mind will be still in front of you, with you just stroking it, there, mind, shh, everything's okay. You'll have peace and stillness, simply because you're not feeding the anger of the elephant with violence. Too often people do violence to the mind in meditation. They don't have enough kindness, enough peace, enough gentleness. Which is why they can spend 9 days in a beautiful retreat center like this and just go more and more crazy. When you know how to meditate, you sit here and you're just so kind. You sit here and say, mind, the door of my heart is totally open to you. I'd love you no matter what happens in the next half an hour of meditation. You can fall asleep, you can think about all sorts of stupid things, you can even get nimittas, I don't mind, whatever you do, I give you unconditional love and acceptance. You have attitudes like that, and your mind gets very, very still and peaceful. Why? Because where you are, you want to be. You're not trying to get anywhere else. You're not having this great suffering of wanting to be somewhere else, or wanting to do something else. You're just right here, at peace with things, kind to them. And that's where everything settles down, becomes peace, and becomes still. When you start doing this, you understand how easy it is to meditate when you get the knack of it. Your job is just to accept things, not to fight for things, not to want things, but to be free from all this wanting. Just to be happy to be right here with no fault finding. And then you just look at this moment, and this moment just develops. It just gets more and more still, more and more peaceful, more and more happy. Why? Because when the mind is not fighting, it can rest. When it can rest, it can build up its energies again. Just imagine that you never slept. And you're always working at your office, going home, working at home, fixing this up, and never ever stopping at all. How tired would you be? Now you can understand how tired the mind is, how actually weak it is, how low in energy most human minds are. So rest the mind, just be happy to be here. When you're not fighting and busy fixing things up, fixing your meditation up, fixing your mind up, fixing your life up, where you can just see the other bricks in the wall, this is good enough, just make peace with things, be kind. Then you have the opportunity to rest, to be still, to find a little bit of peace. And then the mind re-energizes. It literally wakes up. And do you know the meaning of the word Buddha? In the West we started off calling it the Enlightened One, but that's not an accurate translation. The Buddha comes from the word Bujati, which means to wake up. The word Awakened One is accurate to the Pali. It's like, you wake up. Are you awake now? Not really. You're half awake, not even a half awake, maybe 10%. When you really wake up, when you experience these things in meditation, it's if your mindfulness starts to really increase. The food tastes more delicious, the trees are more beautiful, even the wood in front of you looks, wow, look at the beautiful colours in those wood. I love telling this story. It's one of my favourite stories. It's gross. But it's true. On one retreat some years ago, I was getting some very nice meditation. My mind was just so peaceful, so still, so energized. And of course, one of the things I had to do was to go to the toilet. And I just dumped a few things in the bottom of the bowl. Before I flushed, I gazed and had a look. My goodness, I'd never seen such a beautiful piece of feces in my life. Now, I mean, the browns in it, you know, there weren't just one single brown. There were a bit of darker, and the way it was all arranged, and actually the shape of it, and it was almost sensuous, the way it was like curved and stuck together. And as I looked deeper, I just couldn't flush it away. That was like sacrilege. That was throwing a work of art away. It's like taking a Picasso or Michelangelo's David and flushing it down the toilet. How can you do that? It was just too beautiful. That always gets a laugh, but it was actually true. I mean, you can't make these weird stories up, but that's what actually happens. So during this retreat, if you see someone in the toilet staring at the bowl, going, wow, look at that, you know they've got some good meditation going. And the only reason that works, the reason that works is because your mind is waking up. You see beauty in everything. The mind gets so strong that joy is all around, even in the toilet bowl. Everywhere is just joy and happiness and fun. You're waking up. So the still mind is a very powerful mind and a very joyful mind. Most of the anger, irritation, ill will which you experience in the office or on the way to work, either in the public transport or on the roads, most of that is coming from tiredness. It's not people, you know, just have, you know, bad will. They're not sort of doing this on purpose. It's not that they hate the whole world. It's just they're so tired that life is dull, grey and boring. And they're just fed up. And they just take it out on each other. You start to wake up. You get so much joy and happiness. You're on the freeway. Please change lane in front of me. Come on, come in, come in, come in, come in, come in. Please take my seat on the sort of the MRT. I'll wait for the next train. Please, you take my seat. Whatever it is. In the office, please you take the promotion. I'll wait for next time. You're just so much joy and happiness. You'll be so giving. And you just can't get upset at people. Simply because the more still you are, the more energy and the more happiness you have. So actually when you stop wanting things, when this is good enough, when you don't have to be busy fixing things up, when you can rest mentally, energy starts to come back. You become more aware. You have more happiness. And of course then, meditation's simple. You're so aware, you're so happy, I don't want anything else in the whole world, just to sit here, just to enjoy this moment. And that's when you get into the deep meditations. The mind doesn't move. It doesn't want to move. There's no restlessness. Why? Why would you want to be restless? You're having such a good time where you are. And when you're still having a good time, you get absorbed into this moment. Stillness and oneness come. It's not that hard to focus if you're enjoying things. Recently, you had the World Cup soccer. And I'm sure that many of you had husbands or kids who were so focused on the TV screen. Totally one-pointed in what we call TV samadhi. That even though they needed to go to the toilet, they just couldn't feel their body. Even though the telephone rang, they couldn't hear it. Even though their wife shouted in their ear, "Dinner is ready!" You just could not hear it. You were totally one-pointed on the TV screen. Why can people not know? This is one story. There's a Malaysian couple who come to our centre in Perth. And they told me just how easy it was to get one-pointed when they're watching the TV. Because they were watching a movie. Must have been a very good movie. They never told me what the movie was. You know, in their lounge room, in their home. And when the movie was finished, one of them went up to put the kettle on to make themselves a cup of tea. The other one went to the toilet. When they got up from the sofa, they realized something was missing. Some of the valuable items on the shelf behind the sofa were gone. A burglar had been in the house and had actually been right behind the sofa where they were sitting and took all these valuable items off the shelf. In the same room they were, there was a cheeky burglar, but they were so fixed on the TV they couldn't even hear that burglar stealing right behind their backs. And I told him, if only you could do that while you were meditating, that would be wonderful. So you can do that. And why can you get still and peaceful and one-pointed? Because you're enjoying it. Because it's fun. Because you're watching this movie and you just can't wait for what's going to happen next. It's entertaining. And that's what we have to try and develop in meditation. To have it entertaining, joyful, happy. So you're so focused that people can come behind you. I could ring the bell. You won't even hear it. And that's sometimes what happens. You're sitting here and you just don't hear the bell. Because you're having too good a time. In the movie of your life. The jhanas, enlightenment. All these great movies. Okay, they're reruns. The Buddha first had them, but you know, they're great movies happening right inside your head. So when that joy starts to arise, and it arises because you're not sort of destroying this moment by trying to fix it up and make it better. You're not trying to sort of get somewhere else. You're just being here. Being in this moment, being here, not going somewhere, being here. Stopping all this movement, just being here. Instead of thinking that enlightenment is somewhere else, no, it's being here, right in this moment. One of the other stories, which I love to tell, I'm not sure when the last time I told this story, is a story of the old monk. They're always old monk stories. This is a story of an old monk who went wandering from place to place, and just before the start of the rains retreat, we just finished the rains retreat this morning, or yesterday morning, at the start of the rains retreat, when the monks aren't supposed to travel at all, he came to a beautiful place next to a river, and there was a simple farmhouse close by with some devoted Buddhists. And the man, even though he was poor, said, it is such wonderful good karma to support an old monk for the retreat. Can you please stay with us? I'll build you a very simple hut to protect you from the rain. And you can come to my house every morning and we'll share whatever food we have. And the monk accepted. And the husband, his wife and children were so delighted they had a monk to look after for the rains retreat. And he was a beautiful old monk, wise and kind. And even the children loved him, even the dog loved him. And of course it came the time, after the 3 months retreat, the monk had to leave. And he said, it's time to continue my wandering. And the husband, the wife and the kids started crying. Even the dog put his tail between his legs and started whimpering. Because they loved that old monk. Please don't go. Can you stay longer so we can look after you? You're part of the family. We love you. The monk said, no, I have to go. But, he said, during my meditation, I found out that there's a very huge treasure close by. And out of gratitude for all your good karma, I'm going to tell you where that treasure is. So no longer will you be poor. Listen carefully. He said, tomorrow morning, after I've gone, stand at the threshold of your house with your bow and arrow. Face the rising sun. And when you see the sun come up above the horizon, let the arrow fly. Because where that arrow falls, you will find great riches. And when he told his wife was so excited because old monks don't lie. So they hardly slept that night. They were up there a couple of hours before dawn, him with his bow and arrow, just waiting, waiting for the sun to rise. When it did rise, he shot the arrow, and where it fell, they all rushed. And you know what it's like in India in those days. He made his wife dig the hole. His wife was digging, 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 digging. And what did she find? Nothing. Only trouble. Because where the arrow fell was in a field which belonged to a rich man. And a rich man saw the woman digging. He said, "What are you doing digging in my field?" And she pointed to her husband and said, "It's his fault." And it said to her husband, "What are you doing that for?" And he said, "Because this old monk told me to." And the rich man said, old monks don't lie. There must be something to this." And so he asked for the instructions again. "Ah, I know what was wrong. What does a poor thin man like you know about shooting an arrow? You're just too weak." He said, "Look, tomorrow morning I'll shoot the arrow and we'll split the treasure 50-50. So the following morning, the rich man was there with the bow and arrow, standing at the threshold of the house. This time the husband had to carry the shovel. And as soon as the sun rose, the rich man shot the arrow, went much farther because it was much stronger. And where the arrow fell, they all ran after it, and this time the husband had to dig the hole. He dug, 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 dug. What did he find? Nothing. Only more trouble, because this time it fell in an orchard, and that orchard belonged to a general in the army. And a general came from his soldiers and said, "What are you doing? You're in big trouble." And the husband said, "It's the rich man's fault." The rich man said, "No, it's the old monk's fault." And the general said, "What do you mean?" And he told the story. And the general said, "Old monks don't lie. I know your problem. You're lay people. You don't know about archery. I'm a soldier. I'm a general in the army. I know how to shoot an arrow. The deal is, tomorrow morning, I will shoot the arrow. Where the arrow falls, we'll dig a hole. I'm sure we'll find the treasure there. We'll split it three ways." They had no choice, because he was the general. The following morning, the general was there with his soldiers, and this time he made the rich man carry the shovel. Even though he was fat, he had to dig the hole. And he shot the arrow. It went a long way, because he was a professional soldier. And where the arrow fell, they all ran after it, and now the rich man had to dig a big hole. And what did he find? Nothing. That's right. Only more trouble. Because this time, the arrow fell in the garden of the king. And the king arrested a lot of them and brought them to trial in court. "What were you doing, despoiling the royal garden?" And the general said, "It's the rich man's fault." Rich man said, "It's the husband's fault." The husband said, "It's the wife's fault." Wife said, "It's the old monk's fault." When the king heard the story, the king said, "You got it. Old monks don't lie." So he says, "Look, I'm going to have to put you in prison, but I'm going to find that old monk and get to the bottom of this, because this is very, very strange." So he sent his soldiers out, and after a couple of days they found that monk and they brought him back to the palace. They had everybody in the palace again, and they interrogated the old monk and said, "You've got all these people into big trouble. Why?" And the old monk said, "Because they did not follow my instructions." Just like you. If you followed my instructions, you'd be enlightened by now. That's why you get into trouble. You don't follow instructions. So, the old monk said, "Sire, tomorrow morning, let's all go to that poor man's home. You can have the bow and arrow this time, and I'll give you the instructions, and I guarantee, said the old monk, that where that arrow falls, you'll find such a huge treasure, even as a king you can split it four ways and have plenty, let alone how much money that poor family will get. So the king went there in the following morning, and there he was with the bow and arrow, standing waiting for the sun to rise. And he was just about to shoot when the monk said, stop! You're not following the instructions. How do you mean? Said the king. I'm standing at the threshold. Correct. I'm facing the rising sun. Correct. The sun is about to rise. Correct. I'm letting the arrow fly. No, you're not. You're shooting it. Let the arrow fly. The king understood. He dropped the arrow, and it fell to the space between his feet where he was standing. And there they only dug a small hole, and they found this huge treasure, even a quarter of which was enough to make a king happy, let alone the poor family. And the moral of that story is, where do you shoot your arrow to find peace? Not over there, not over there, but right here. That's where you find jhana, enlightenment, everything you ever wanted, you find right here. So don't go looking for nimittas over there. Don't go thinking I've got to get rid of this sloth and torpor and then I'll find enlightenment. No, where sloth and torpor is, that's where you'll find peace and enlightenment. Where your crazy mind is, you don't need to get rid of it. Drop the arrow right there, wherever you happen to be standing. That's where you find peace and happiness. Don't want, because wanting is the arrow of craving, which falls sometimes over in a rich man's field, sometimes in a general's field, sometimes in a king's field. It always gets you into trouble, the arrow of craving. So let it fly, let it drop. And where it drops, right where you're standing, there you will find a treasure beyond your wildest dreams. That's a nice story there, which actually shows you how to meditate and why we fail in our meditation. We're shooting our meditation sometimes over here, sometimes over there. We're not letting it go, not letting it be right where we are. This is good enough. Actually, it's more than good enough. Actually, as they say in Australia, it's bloody good. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. Wow! When you stop wanting and try to get somewhere else. When you stop all of this aiming for here and aiming for there. When you let go of all of that, you find peace. You find stillness. You find energy. You find joy. The mind just becomes still. Why? Because you're not agitating it anymore. You're not making it go somewhere else. You're lessening the suffering of always wanting to be somewhere else. Which means you at last you can enjoy where you already are. Enjoying where you are. Enjoying your stupid mind. Enjoying your dull mind. Not wanting to be any different. You're making good meditation karma. The dullness, the restlessness, the frustration, all disappears. And you're one happy little meditator. Just floating around Jhana Grove Meditation Retreat Center with a beautiful, stupid smile on your face. How are you? Oh, this is good enough. Where are you going? Just here. What are you trying to achieve? Nothing. So be a happy meditator. Now, I've given all the instructions, and I'm 59, I'm getting to be an old monk. And remember, old monks. Don't lie. Thank you. Very good. So any questions about the old monks don't lie talk? They're good fun. It's also, it's not just for fun. That's a very deep talk. So just focus on it. Understand it. Just good enough. Just let things go. And where you are is where you want to be. Yes. Connie. Chicken and a duck. Ah, that old chicken. You've heard that chicken and duck story many times. The old quack quack joke. But no, you've heard that sort of very much. So that's just when you don't argue with people in this world. How many of you haven't heard the chicken and the duck story? 2, 3, 4. That many? My goodness me. Where have you been? How come you haven't bought my book? Okay. Once upon a time. I usually tell this at marriage ceremonies. Once upon a time, there was this couple, they'd just been married for a few days. They were still gloriously in love, just gazing into each other's deep, depthless eyes in adoration of one another. And one after dinner one evening, they said, let's go for a walk. Oh yes, I'd love to go for a walk with you. So hand in hand, they went for this wonderful walk in the forest, enjoying the evening air and the scented flowers and the beautiful breeze through the trees. And everything was going just so perfectly, as life sometimes does, until there was an interruption. Quack, quack. Quack, quack. And, let's change it a little bit. And the man said, oh, listen to that, dear. That's a rabbit. And she said, that's not a rabbit. That's a duck. He said, no. I'm totally sure. That's a rabbit. He said, no, it can't be. Rabbits don't go. How do rabbits go? Rabbits go ducks go quack quack. That was a duck. She says. He said, no, it was a rabbit. I'm sure, a flying rabbit. No, it was a duck. No, it was a rabbit. No, it was a duck. It was a rabbit. And she started to cry. He said, look, I'm sure it really was a duck. Then, no, it was a rabbit. And then she looked at him. This was the man she chose above all others to spend her life with. And she realized it wasn't really worthwhile destroying the evening over this silly argument. She looked at him and said, darling, I really think you're right. That was a rabbit. And he said, thank you, darling. And they carried on their walk together. In peace and in love. And I do change the people around. In that version, again, the girl was the smart one and the wise one. Does it really matter whether it was a rabbit or a duck? Is that really worth destroying, you know, your life over just stupid arguments like that? And of course, the other part of that story is sometimes we always think we're right. And all the evidence showed it went quack, quack. It has to be a duck. Doesn't have to be a duck. It's amazing what rabbits can do these days. You train them long enough, they won't do anything. Quack, quack. Anyway, that's the story though. The chicken and the duck just changed a little bit. The moral of that story is that, look, you know, who's right, who's wrong? We don't know. And is it really worthwhile arguing, making ourselves upset about such things? So wanting to be right is a problem. Wanting to be happy, wanting to be at peace is what wise people want. And how do you get that? Ah, just letting things be. When you are where you want to be, when this is good enough, when you don't want to be anywhere else, just here, just you, with this mug who tells stupid jokes, then you're at peace. So it's easy. Any other questions? Yes. Sadhu sing. Sadhu means it is well. It's the same way as, instead of clapping, which makes your hands very sore. You know, sometimes, it's true, sometimes I've been at these sort of conferences and they have all these presentations. You know, even like at the Buddhist Fellowship, they give presentations so you have to clap. Someone else comes up, you have to clap. Your hands get really sore after a few minutes, all these presentations. And they can't just get everyone to get the awards all at the same time. Just have one clap for everybody. It's much better. So instead of doing the clapping, we do the sadhus. And usually it's just sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It's really boring. So it's really good to put energy into whatever you do in life. So that's why I did the sadhu. So we'd all do it together again. Sadhu. 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 Do it over the top. And then you get a lot of joy coming up, a lot of happiness. And then when you meditate afterwards, meditation is easy. You're just generating joy. People have good fun as well. They enjoy the meditation. They want to come back again. So putting joy into your life, even in meditation, is wonderful. You get some great deep meditations that way. You get also get enlightened as well. You know the tradition which I follow? The three main traditions in Buddhism? Hinayana, Mahayana and Vajrayana. So obviously, being in the West, you want to combine everything. So I take the H from Hinayana, the Aha from Mahayana, and the Yana from Vajrayana. And what does that spell? Hahayana. There you go, you're all Hahayanists. Okay, see that. Okay, it's 9 o'clock now, you've had enough. So, because there's so many people wanting these interviews, I've put the sheet down there. If you want an interview this morning from 9:15 to about 10:15, you can have an interview in the morning as well if you need to. So I'm available for those. So you don't have to. It's voluntary, but if you want to sort of ask a question, and somebody said yesterday, and they followed the advice, and thank you for them, if you really have a good question, put it on a piece of paper so it could be answered in the evening time. Then everyone can share, you know, the good question. So if it's like a general question which you think other people can enjoy the answer to, put it on a piece of paper. Don't come and ask it in the interview. So in the interview, more like a personal meditation practice. General questions, put on a piece of paper. Okay, have a great morning.